We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, starting with a somber headline this morning, at least 4 people were killed and 9 others were wounded in a school shooting an hour outside of Atlanta yesterday on Wednesday, authorities said. This coming from NBC. One suspect was alive and taken into custody following the gunfire at the high school, according to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. According to Town Hall, the suspected shooter has been identified as a 14-year-old, a student. And I don't generally read the names. I don't like to give these types of people any sort of notoriety. But it is a 14-year-old, a student who was at the school, and authorities announced at a press conference around 4 p.m. Eastern time yesterday that this individual is being charged with murder and will be tried as an adult. So just really sad. And always, you know, in the midst of these types of tragedies, and they are, the left always goes to the gun control debate. And, you know, some of those things, we saw that from Kamala Harris, even from Obama on social media yesterday. And my response to this from a biblical worldview is, if you're teaching kids and you're teaching, you know, future generations that they're nothing but a clump of cells until literally the moment of birth, and their life has no value unless we as society or your parent chooses that you have dignity and value, then you're just inputting into them an ideology that doesn't respect life. And as a society, we need to respect life so much more. And there are always, you know, things and that we end up finding out about these types of shooters. And there was a report yesterday that said that there was an investigation about a year ago about an allegation that this same individual was putting threats toward the school, but there wasn't enough to act on. So now, you know, should we have red flag laws and all of these things? Well, you know, my position still is that I've never seen a red flag law that was constitutionally viable. And again, it's more about the ideology that we are teaching our young people than it is about just simply pre-enforcement crime or even restraints on lawful carry of firearms. So let's turn to X, and Brazil is banning X, and could that happen in the United States? So Brazil's decision to ban X underscores a growing trend of governments using their power to silence digital platforms that they find politically inconvenient. And so let's welcome in Carl Szabo, who is the NetChoice Vice President and General Counsel, and also a professor of Internet Law at George Mason University. So good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
Yeah. So so what's going on in Brazil exactly? I mean, I know that Elon Musk and X have been posting prolifically, but for people who maybe aren't as online as somebody like me, what is Brazil's decision and their rationale for banning X?
Yeah, it's really scary what's going on, not only in Brazil, but across the rest of the world. And we're starting to see it here in the United States. And this is government banning speech that they just don't like. And what happened in Brazil is a Brazilian judge, and the judicial system there, the courts get to be judge, jury, and executioner all in one. So this judge decided X is no longer allowed to host the following accounts because they engaged in, quote, disinformation, or as you like to say it, politically inconvenient truths. And some of these individuals that the judge required X terminate their accounts, One is the Brazilian Joe Rogan. One is a Brazilian senator. One is a Brazilian congressman. And Elon Musk said, no, no, I'm not going to terminate these accounts just because you don't like what they say. And as a result, Brazil took the next step and it banned X in the country. And it banned X in part because Elon Musk didn't leave any X employees in the country to be arrested for this. So now in Brazil, no one may access X. If you try and access X, you are fined $9,000 by using a VPN or something similar. And unfortunately, what happens in Brazil doesn't stay in Brazil. We have seen in France an effort to shut down Telegram. We have seen in England an effort to similarly shut down X. And in Russia, they shut down Meta or Facebook. And we are also starting to see this type of ban on free speech come here to the United States.
Well, and this is Orwellian, to put it honestly, mildly, that there are so many different countries that are looking to censor online speech. And unfortunately, rather than the controls that they wouldn't have otherwise of just verbal speech, this can be done through technology. And, you know, here in the United States, we'd say, well, we have First Amendment protections. We have some of these things against government. But in a potential Harris administration, I mean, we've seen what happened with the former Twitter files and how the government was just telling these social media companies, and now this letter from Mark Zuckerberg as well to Chairman Jim Jordan that said, yeah, I just kind of went along with it. And there was pressure to censor these accounts. Is that really the loophole that a potential Harris administration could use unless a court says, you know, no, you can't basically become an agent of the government to circumvent the First Amendment?
Yeah, that's a great question. So looking at what Vice President Harris has said on this issue, you go look back to 2019 or 2019 campaign, where Kamala Harris was up on the stage next to Elizabeth Warren, and Kamala Harris is calling for Twitter to terminate President Trump's Twitter account. And Elizabeth Warren thought that that was too extreme for the situation, but that's where Kamala Harris was in 2019. She has not given any interviews or made any statements to suggest she's somewhere different. In fact, during the Biden-Harris administration, we saw, as you point out, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, other social media platforms being harassed and coerced into silencing or censoring content or discussions around COVID, around the Hunter Biden laptop situation. And similarly, you saw the Biden-Harris administration create the Disinformation Governance Board with scary Mary Poppins to run it and control speech. So yes, this is a huge threat. Now, we do have options on the table. Chairman Jim Jordan, the head of the Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives, created something called the Protecting Free Speech from Government Interference Act, Protecting Free Speech from Government Interference Act. And it's a pretty simple bill. What it says is that when you are operating as a federal agent, when you are operating as a representative of you, me, and every other American citizen, you may not use your position for political purposes to silence or censor content online. And this passed, unfortunately, along party lines. It should have been unanimous out of the House almost a year ago. And it has just sat in the Senate where they won't even take up the bill for consideration. This should be a no-nonsense piece of legislation because as an American, as a representative, you should not care left, right, or center who's in the White House. No president, no executive branch should be out there censoring, silencing, or acting like authoritarian regimes to prevent American citizens from seeing or saying what they want to say or say.
And that makes so much sense. And this is why President Trump has said for the past several years that he is for a digital bill of rights and to protect speech. And so there is a contrast between the free speech of the more conservative right and this type of censorship on the Democratic left. But interestingly, then, Carl Szabo, who is my special guest this morning, is the vice president and general counsel for NetChoice and the professor of Internet Law at George Mason University. There's also this issue of so-called hate speech. And with the rise of a lot of anti-Semitic content on X, there are even some conservatives who are very pro-Israel saying, well, this does fall under kind of the violent language rule or some running afoul of what X and Meta should say. And so Meta has actually determined that this line, quote, from the river to the sea, is actually okay, and that's not hate speech. And of course, that's used in a context that it's very anti-Semitic. So where are the lines in terms of a digital bill of rights and the freedom of speech to even say things that are deemed hateful or that even some on the right don't prefer?
Yeah, so I'm Jewish. In fact, our temple was desecrated. We've had armed guards every time I pick up or drop off my kids at Hebrew school since time immemorial. This is the way, unfortunately, that it is for the Jewish people in this country. And having said that, as somebody who does not want the government to decide what is or is not allowed speech, what is or is not hate speech, what is or is not truth, I similarly have to say, you know, even though I clearly disagree with all these statements, from the river to the sea is blatantly anti-Semitic in my mind, but it is the right of an individual to say that. And the government may not prevent them from saying that. Now, having said that, a private business, of course, can prevent them from saying that on their premises. You as a host can decide who comes on your show. We at NetChoice have fought all the way to the Supreme Court to make sure that private businesses have the right to decide what they say, what type of cakes, for example, they are required to make or choose to make. And that is the First Amendment, for good or for bad. But when it comes to the government coming in and deciding what is or is not hate speech, when it comes to the government coming in and deciding what is or is not disinformation, that's where we all must draw the line. Because at the end of the day, if any website hosts, for example, anti-Semitic speech, or simply a university hosts anti-Semitic protests, we can vote with our feet. We can choose to not use that site. We can go somewhere else. We can do what we all did with Bud Light when they did something we didn't like. But that can't be done when it's the federal government silencing us all.
Yeah, and Carl, I really appreciate you sharing your personal views and your background as well, because I totally agree with you. And, you know, and as a Christian, I see so much content online that I disagree with, that I think is blasphemous, that I think is just terrible in terms of making fun of Christians, of actually having what I would term as hate speech toward Christians. But in terms of the government coming in and telling a person that they can't say that, my option is to block them on my social media, or to, you know, take other actions to ignore that, or to use the tools that are available. And we do need to draw a line between government action versus these private platforms, and not confuse those two or have the platform become an agent of the government for purposes of censorship. And those two issues, I think, are very clear, but it's also nuanced in a sense when even conservatives for the position that we should be on, even if it's absolutely abhorrent rhetoric that we completely disagree with, we should stand up for the right of the person to say it without government intrusion, because that's not the province of the government. And we, you know, have literally fought for that through America's existence. So in just the last minute I have with you, where then should the line be drawn in terms of the private platform saying, you know, we're going to clamp down on some of this, you know, genuinely anti-Semitic type of content or otherwise hate speech, in terms of what they allow on platforms if it's still a private company?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, every business has to make a decision that they think is right for them and their customers. And we will respond accordingly. You've seen people do, you know, the hashtag leave Facebook or hashtag leave YouTube or something like that. people will vote with their feet if a business does something that we don't like. And it is their right as a private business. And I would say the same thing for any business. It's impossible as a conservative for me to support decisions like Hobby Lobby and Masterpiece Cakes, which are centered around the right of a private business to decide what's best for its users or its business, and then simultaneously turn around and say, well, unless it's something I don't like.
Right. So well said. And thanks, Carl Szabo. You can follow him at Carl Szabo on X, which is my preferred platform because it's for free speech. But we'll be right back with more right after this.
Twice a year, American Family Radio opens the phone lines to ask for listener support in our effort to promote godly values. We call it Share-a-thon. And it's also your chance to tell us your AFR story.
I was headed to work one morning and just happened upon the radio station, and I honestly don't think that my station has changed since then.
If God has used AFR in your life, we'd love to hear you tell us about it.
I've been a big help in keeping my mind straight and walking with the Lord. Thank y'all very much.
Your story can be an encouragement to our radio staff and to other listeners as well.
AFR has helped me out a lot. It helps me to keep in touch with the Lord. It's a good reminder that God loves us.
Call us at 877-876-8893 and give us a one-minute voicemail telling us your AFR story. That's 877-876-8893. And then listen for your voice during Share-a-thon, October 8th, 9th, and 10th on American Family Radio. Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of our First Amendment, there are several religious liberty cases that are big in the news. And so to discuss those, let's welcome in Chris Woodward, who is our newscast coordinator for American Family News, which brings you, of course, the top trending headlines from a biblical worldview perspective and, of course, not the jaded perspective of the mainstream media. So, Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, so a couple of these, I'm seeing a First Liberty case and also another ex-employee that sues Blue State University for allegedly firing her after she converted to Christianity. This coming from the Daily Caller.
Right.
So what's going on? Let's start with that case and then we'll get to the First Liberty.
Okay, yeah. Now, keep in mind, listener, that no matter where a religious freedom case plays out in these United States of America, it can impact you depending on how the court comes down. I'll get to that in just a minute. But this particular case was first reported by Daily Caller. We're working on our own coverage at AFN.net. A former City University of New York staff member is suing the university for wrongfully terminating her employment after she converted to Christianity. That's according to a religious discrimination lawsuit last week. The individual's name is Tiona Pagan, if I pronounce that correctly. She worked at CUNY's Research Foundation as the Fellowships and Public Service Program Coordinator and alleges she was denied a religious accommodation for an aspect of her job that required her to recruit students for a fellowship focused on the promotion of so-called LGBT rights and causes. That, again, is according to the complaint filed August 28th. I just said this a moment ago, but no matter where a case plays out in the U.S., it can and impact you, which is why you need to pay attention to these things if you live in Albany, New York, or New Albany, Mississippi. I often will ask an attorney at the end of an interview, hey, let's imagine somebody in our listening audience, maybe they're reading the forthcoming article. They think, well, that's unfortunate. I hope he or she wins, but this doesn't impact me. It does, because how a court comes down can be used in other court cases that involve similar issues. And there are hardly a six-week period goes by without some sort of dispute where somebody who was a teacher or worked for an institution all of a sudden says, I can't do LGBTQ things anymore. It violates my religious beliefs. And a number of law firms that we all know and work with, you've had several on your show, come on and talk about these things, and they try to pass on the importance of why we all need to be in prayer for these people and paying attention to this, and we reach out to legal assistance if and when these things pop up in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, really well said, Chris Woodward. And I think that's such an excellent point to underscore that people need to be paying attention to these things that are even just regional at the beginning, because every single case that gets up to the U.S. Supreme Court started somewhere local. And whether the correct position, the constitutional position, won initially, the losing side generally has the right of appeal or can appeal. And so either way, you know, we have situations like Masterpiece Cake Shop, or 303 Creative, or some of these that have gone all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, that then that opinion will impact the judicial system across the United States. And so it's not just a matter of saying, well, you know, this isn't in my state, so I can ignore it. But it is a matter of saying, hopefully, each state that has these different rules will at least have will set up the facts to best go up to the Supreme Court if it gets there, or a court of appeals, to have the right outcome. So in Colorado, for example, with the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which, you know, I like to call a modern day star chamber because that's basically what it is. That's not a good way to set up, you know, some of these facts, but that's ultimately why some of these designers prevailed for the First Amendment. And so it's really important to understand what's going on across the country in a lot of these First Amendment and especially religious freedom cases. And this gets us to First Liberty. My good friend Kelly Shackelford, who is the head there, they do such excellent work. And so this headline, the appeal was filed by a Maine Christian school challenging a state law that prevents participation in a school choice program. So what is going on in Maine?
Yeah, well, we'll kind of go back a little bit for a couple of years. From 1980 until the Supreme Court's 2022 ruling in Carson v. Macon, parents could not use their tuition benefit at a religious school. But in anticipation of that Supreme Court's decision against the state of Maine, the legislature there changed the law to require Christian schools, religious schools, to violate their sincerely held religious beliefs in order to participate. In other words, you can have the money, but we're going to make you do what the state wants to do. You're going to have to accept our ways and run your lives and operate your schools according to our ideology, not yours. And First Liberty Institute says, nah, you can't do that. You are free to operate according to your religious principles. And that's why they have filed an appeal to the First Circuit Court of Appeals, asking them to reverse a lower court ruling earlier this year that upheld a Maine law preventing schools from being able to participate in voucher programs, school choice programs. This is very important. It's probably something that's going to play out for months, if not the next year and a half. And the reason I say that is briefing just began this week, which means the earliest you're going to have arguments at the appeals court is probably January of next year, and that's being very optimistic. However the appeals court comes down is going to be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, which makes this presidential election all that more important, because Americans are not just picking the president, they're picking the person that's going to pick probably the next two or three Supreme Court justices that will decide this case.
And I'm speaking with Chris Woodward, who is the newscast coordinator for American Family News. And you can find them, of course, online as well as on X at AFN_network. And you're right. I mean, this case, we need to be following it. And the quotation from the Associate Counsel for First Liberty Institute says families should be free to choose the educational option that works best for them without the state's unconstitutional interference. Mm-hmm. Maine excluded religious schools from its school choice program for over 40 years, but the U.S. Supreme Court made clear that such religious discrimination must end. And like I was talking in the previous segment with Carl Szabo, I mean, this is all about government not interfering where the First Amendment provides protections, whether that is for speech online in a digital platform, or whether that is a school in terms of school choice, or whether that's, for example, parents who want to choose homeschooling. I mean, there are things that are part of our powers that are delegated to us and protected because the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution doesn't give government the ability to dictate that for us. We, the people, actually have powers of government, which part of that is the parental realm of governing our own family. Self-government still is a thing in the United States, and we need to protect and preserve that. So, so Chris Woodward, let's move over to the topic of Israel and everything that is going on. We're seeing that as campuses, college campuses start to come back to school, we're already seeing a more pro-Palestine or pro-terror protests. We're also seeing that there is still ongoing tensions in the Middle East and with the rescue of those hostages over the weekend, and Netanyahu pledging yet again that he's just going to completely destroy Hamas and Hezbollah. And then we are rapidly, we are about a month away from the 1 year anniversary of that horrific October 7th attack. So where are we situated in terms of the Middle East and the news there?
Well, we're still in, you know, a period of war between Israel and Hamas. Israel is retaliating for being attacked by terrorists on October 7th of last year. You know, going back over the weekend, this is kind of how the narrative has changed over the story. It went from Israel was attacked, and then about, you know, 48 hours later in October of last year, it became, oh, these poor Palestinians. That's how the media kind of started referring to it and calling Israel oppressors. And then, of course, we saw the protests here in the U.S. On many college campuses. But over the weekend, you had Hamas kill some hostages. People started protesting in Jerusalem, telling Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the government, you have to reach a ceasefire, we have to get these hostages home, that kind of thing. President Joe Biden, who wanted to remind people that he's still the president, even though he's been sitting on a beach far too more than, much more than any other president has ever done, he came out and made statements over the weekend saying, Israel needs to do more here, to which Netanyahu goes on television and says, we are doing things. We keep agreeing to terms and everything that you and other countries throw out there. Hamas is the one rejecting it. By the way, we won't be preached to. That was his actual words. And he went on to say that there needs to be more international attention on Hamas terrorists and the people controlling folks in Gaza. And don't worry so much about what Israel is doing. We are not the bad guys here. We're trying to defend ourselves and eradicate Hamas, which is something he said for many, many months now. Here in the U.S., protests are starting to pick back up again, and I should say anti-Israel, pro-Hamas protests are picking up again on college campuses. Columbia is back in school. NYU was back in school. Those are places that were in the news a lot for these kinds of shenanigans last year. And they are going to presumably kick up or continue as we go day by day without what people refer to as a ceasefire hostage deal. Interestingly enough, Greta, how dare you, Thunberg, was among the people arrested in Europe for one of the anti-Israel pro-Hamas protests. So apparently she's not just worried about the climate anymore. She's trying to get Israel to bow the knee to terrorists that attacked them.
Well, maybe it's because, you know, she had to delete her tweet on how, you know, the world was going to end in 2017 or whatever.
Missed it by that much.
Yeah. So, you know, and in the leftist view, it's like if for them, and you know, they don't believe in the 6 day literal creation, and they say the world has existed for millions and millions of years, but now suddenly, you know, just now we're, you know, 2 seconds to midnight and all of that. But you know, so Greta is apparently getting involved in all of this. But the president, the former president of Colombia, has resigned over the summer. And that, of course, as Speaker Johnson put out a statement about that. And so for Colombia, are they now under a new tenure of their new president? Are they treating these protests differently? Or what's the situation going on at some of these schools that gained so much attention at the end of the last academic year?
Yeah, that's a great question. Several schools have taken steps to say, we're not going to let you do what you did last year. But it's not enough to really deter people. And something really needs to be done on one of these campuses peacefully, of course. So that way things don't spill over into other parts of the country. We did see situations outside of New York or outside of, you know, Berkeley last year on some other college campuses. Even here in Mississippi, one of our universities, they had an anti-Israel pro-Hamas demonstration here at one of our public universities, not far from where I'm sitting. It was nowhere near the level of Columbia or NYU, but something needs to be done. And soon, to prevent these things from continuing into the fall and the winter terms or quarters, whatever the campus wants to call it. You know, Florida last year, and this was, I would say, way too late, but they did put out statements saying, look, we're not a daycare, okay? You can't act like children. Agitators who break rules will face consequences. But something needs to be done now, because a lot of these students went home for summer break. Now they're back. They're energized. They see things still playing out in the news in a way that they don't like. And they're starting to stir things up with social media posts and TikToks and other things. And that's why you're seeing more people on college quads than in the classroom at this very moment.
Yeah, I'm proud of Florida for doing that, and I think that's so well said that they're not daycares. These are institutions that, you know, especially if it's a university, these are students that most of them generally are adults, and they need to act like it. But I'm speaking with Chris Woodward, who is a reporter also for American Family News, and you can see all of those headlines at AFN.net. You can follow American Family News on X at AFN_network. All of the other social media platforms as well. Other than TikTok, I don't think you guys probably aren't on TikTok, right?
No.
Okay.
And well, that's
good. Good. Me either. That's the one platform that I'm like, no, yeah. Let's not do that one. But you can also follow Chris on X at reporter Chris W. So in just the last few minutes I have with you, Chris, talk a little bit more about American Family News, just generally, because I know that so many of our listeners
right.
don't want to see the headlines from, you know, all of the major media that really is just PR for either the Republican or the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see headlines from first and foremost, a truthful fact reporting perspective, but also from a biblical perspective.
Yes. Thank you very much. American Family News, or AFN.net, is the website for AFN, American Family News. Now, the cool thing about us is we exist on two platforms, radio and print news, which is rare in this day and age of journalism. So we do radio news, we do print news. And at the top of every hour of American Family radio stations, and then about 100 or so non-AFR stations that also air our news now, you can hear a newscast, 4.5 minutes of news from a Christian perspective. We're going to tell you a little bit of what you're going to see in here on a television news outlet, if that's where you want to get your information. But then we work in those important stories that you need to know, things that other people are not covering, not even on Fox, those religious freedom cases. I'm proud to say that more often than not these days, we often have the religious freedom case the day before, if not the same day, that Fox is talking about it. So do check us out. We're not in the news to break news, but we do often have things before the big guys get it on their television screens. So do check us out on AFN.net. The website has a ton of content. It's not just stories that you hear from us, but we have Associated Press content. We've got columns. We've got political cartoons. There is a latest from the web section to help people save time. They don't have to scour the internet to find out what's on Town Hall, PJ Media, WorldNet Daily, those kinds of things. We do post those in there. We do a video news update. There are podcasts, all kinds of things to keep you and yours informed on what's going on from a Christian perspective. Right now, in fact, we've got stories letting people know the latest on the Georgia high school shooting. We've got previews of the Trump and Harris debate next week. There's Hunter Biden information, all these religious freedom cases that we've mentioned. And also do check out the missions section. When you go to the categories, click on that and you'll find some religious freedom persecution stories.
Oh, wonderful. So, you know, this is an aggregation and kind of a one-stop shop, American Family News, and you can go to AFN.net. Chris Woodward, always appreciate you and your insights. Most listeners are probably familiar with your reporting and commentary on today's issues, and I will actually be a guest
All
today
right.
on today's issue, so I'll see you then if you're on as well, and
yes.
always appreciate joining the guys. So thanks so much for your time, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, the Biden administration is warning of Russian interference in the 2024 presidential election. I think we've heard this story before, but this coming from CBS. The Biden administration accused Russia of attempting to interfere in the 2024 presidential election, including through a sophisticated influence campaign that involved the creation of fake news sites designed to covertly spread Russian propaganda. Federal agencies were set to announce Wednesday or yesterday a series of actions against Russia in response to the operation, including charges filed by the Justice Department. But meanwhile, Democrats are completely ignoring the SAVE Act, which is attempting to just make it illegal for people who shouldn't be voting in our elections to vote and make sure that every legal vote counts and counts fairly. And as conservatives like to say, to make it easier to vote but harder to cheat. And so Congressman Bob Good from the great state of Virginia posted this on his X account yesterday. I fully support Speaker Johnson's move to include Chip Roy's SAVE Act on a 6-month continuing resolution next week. Let Border Czar Harris and the Democrats explain to the American people why they do not want fair and secure elections. So Representative Bob Good, who's also the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, joins us now. So Congressman, this just seems like a common sense, nonpartisan thing to want fair and secure elections. And while the Biden administration is suggesting, you know, Russia's interfering, they don't want that, but yet they don't want the SAVE Act. How can they explain that?
Well, they can't explain it. And there was five or six Democrats who voted to pass the SAVE Act. Chip Roy is our policy chair in the House Freedom Caucus, and he's the author of this bill. He's done a tremendous job, as he always does. And we got that passed out of the House, I think, with every Republican vote and five or six Democrat votes. And then Chuck Schumer has sat on it for 60 days because the Democrats don't want fair and elections. They don't want election integrity. They have fought it every step of the way, as you know, as we have tried to bring election integrity across the country to restore full faith and confidence in our elections to the majority of the American people. No, the Democrats want unsolicited mail ballots. They want drop boxes away from polling places. They want third-party ballot handling or harvesting. They don't want voter ID. They don't want signature matches. They don't want proof of citizenship. And they have fought us and fought us. In fact, they tried to pass, as you know, their own bill, the right to cheat bill, back when they had full control of Congress. Thankfully, it didn't pass the Senate. But that everyone ought to be in favor, to your point, of election integrity. Everyone ought to be in favor of preventing unqualified or ineligible voters from participating, particularly illegals, non-citizens, from voting in our federal election, which is against the law. However, the SAVE Act would help prevent it from taking place by requiring, this would be a change in the law, requiring proof of citizenship to register and requiring states to do what Greg Abbott is trying to do in Texas and Glenn Youngkin is trying to do in Virginia and remove illegals or non-citizens from our voting rolls. If the Democrats were, if what they're saying was true, illegals and non-citizens are not voting, well, then why would they be in favor of just strengthening that reinforcement of it? No harm would be being done, of course, by passing the SAVE Act. But what we're going to find out, Jenna, is, and thankfully Speaker Johnson is following the lead of the House Freedom Caucus. We were the ones who called for this. We called on when we began to take the August district work period, which we said, hey, we should stay in Washington and pass our remaining seven spending bills. We should not be taking this district work period, as the Speaker said we would not. However, unfortunately, he broke his word on that, and he sent us back to our districts. But then we came out with an official statement saying, okay, if we're not going to pass our spending bills, let's pass a continuing resolution into the first quarter so that the will of the American people reflects how the government is funded next year. What did they do on November 5 with the White House, with the Senate, and with the House of Representatives? I think they're going to put all those in Republican control, and let's let us then dictate how the government is funded next year. But let's attach to that this election integrity bill to SAVE Act. We're going to find out if Chuck Schumer and the Democrats want to shut down the government in order to help illegals to vote in our elections.
Wow. And that's a really smart move. And so, you know, generally speaking, when there's this contemplation of a government shutdown and these types of continuing resolutions, it's the Democrats saying, you know, you can't shut down the government and this is a bad thing for Republicans. And so do you expect that the mainstream media is going to take the position that, you know, it's the radical right Republicans that are forcing this and they're responsible for the government shutdown rather than the Democrats just not wanting to pass this type of common sense legislation?
Yes, we have to come to expect that's what the lamestream media is going to do. That's what the left-leaning media is not leaning. The left-wing media is going to do. However, if we come back next week as we're scheduled and if Speaker Johnson does what he says he will do and brings this to the floor for a vote next week, then frankly, we will have funded the government for 6 months into, say, March 31, and we will have passed a bill with that that will help protect the integrity of our elections. And then it is truly in the Senate's lap. Chuck Schumer has a funding mechanism for the government. He can't say we've shut down the government. At least he can't honestly say it. The media can't honestly say it. And the only thing is, will they pass it out of the Senate? Or will they say, no, we're not going to do it because it's only for 6 months? What they really want, Jenna, is they don't want the SAVE Act, of course, and they want to just pass it, some kind of funding mechanism, pass the election. So then, therefore, in a lame duck session of Congress, as members are heading for the exits, they can stick it to us one more time like they did 2 years ago at the end of the previous Congress with an omnibus, a massive 2,000-page spending bill, as lawmakers are, you know, in a hurry to get home for Christmas, and they do the worst of all things to the American people with a terrible omnibus bill. That's what they want. So that's why we ought to just kick it into the first quarter and attach that election integrity bill to the SAVE Act.
And I'm speaking with Representative Bob Good from the great state of Virginia and the chair of the Freedom Caucus. And so speaking of Speaker Johnson, is this something that we hope that he will stand strong on, or are we going to potentially see, you know, we're starting strong and then ultimately, you know, saying, okay, well, we're going to do this continuing resolution. And I mean, how much, I guess, political will do you think that the GOP conference has to really stand firm on this?
Great question. And that really is the question, Jenna. We have not, as you know, demonstrated for nearly 2 years now under the previous speaker, the current speaker, a willingness to fight, a willingness to show the American people that we're strong and that we're tough and that we're resolved and we're committed. We have, you know, we have surrendered to what the Senate and the White House want to do time and time again. So we had a conference call, the Republican conference yesterday, I think it was, or the day before. I think it was yesterday, the day he's run together. But and Speaker Johnson said, hey, he's behind the SAVE Act, going to bring to the floor, I should say, the SAVE Act attached to this funding mechanism, as I've just described. And then a couple of members asked him, including my good friend Matt Gaetz from Florida, okay, is this just showmanship? Are we really going to have a fight? Are we going to stand strong if the Senate says no? Are we going to say yes and hold out and be willing to have a shutdown fight if necessary to fund the government and also do it into the first quarter and attach this election integrity bill, the SAVE Act? And the speaker said, yes, we're going to fight. So I think the conference will stand behind him. I think the American people will stand behind him if he shows that kind of leadership. It's really on the speaker. The speaker's got to lead. And, you know, I feel like Braveheart, the movie, you know, hey, you lead, we'll follow, as William Wallace was begging Robert the Bruce to fight, to lead, to stand strong. We need that kind of leadership in the House, and the Speaker can provide that. He has not to this point. This is his opportunity to do so.
Yes, so well said, and I love that analogy. And so how can our listeners and the American people support that in terms of making the Speaker's office aware that that they would like the SAVE Act to be passed and this attachment to the six-month continuing resolution?
I think the best thing everybody can do, and the great part about this question, Jenna, is it applies no matter what district they live in, Republican or Democrat member of Congress. Let their member of Congress know they want a six-month CR into the first quarter so that the American people's will on November 5 is reflected with how the government's funded next year, and they want the SAVE Act attached. Because Democrats need to hear that too, because Democrats, especially in vulnerable swing Biden-type districts, they really can't afford to vote against funding the government and vote against the election integrity or vote in favor, you know, vote against preventing illegals from participating. So the Democrats need to hear from their constituents as well. So I think hearing from the representatives support the six-month CR with the SAVE Act, and I think that'll be effective in trying to persuade members of Congress to vote for this common sense legislation.
I'm speaking with Congressman Bob Good. You can follow him at Rep. Bob Good on X. And you mentioned earlier in this segment, Congressman, that you anticipate and expect that after November 5th and whatever happens in the presidential election, and so much of the attention has been focused on that instead of things like the SAVE Act and Congress coming back next week, but that if this continuing resolution just provides to get us through until the next Congress, that there, in your view, will be a wider Republican majority in Congress and a Republican control of the Senate. Where do those elections stand in terms of down ballot that people in various states should really be paying attention to?
Well, I think the Senate map looks stronger. I think that West Virginia, Ohio, Montana look like, you know, great pickup opportunities for us, where I don't see vulnerability on the Republican side to lose a Senate seat. The map looks good in the Senate for us. The House, it's harder to predict 435 seats. You've got maybe really only 20-25 really in play because of redistricting and so forth. And the Democrats just have so many deep blue big city districts, and the Republicans tend to have some more deep red, more rural districts. So there's not that many in play. And I think in the near future, you're just not going to see these big majorities. You're going to see narrow majorities. But I do think, Jenna, that if we show the American people that we will fight and that we're standing up for them and we're doing what we said we would do, which we failed in many ways to do that, as you know, from the past nearly 2 years. But this would be one chance to show them before the election. And rather than so many weak Republicans, they fear a fight and say, oh, we can't have a fight right before the election. No, the American people want to see us have a fight before the election, show some resolve. And I think that is key to trying to keep and hopefully expand our majority. So it's going to be tight. It's going to be close. But I think fighting and standing strong and doing what we said we would do is the key, not cooperating with the Democrats' destruction of the country. That is not the key to winning the election.
So well said. And I could not agree more. And I hear from listeners daily just asking, you know, where are the Republicans? Where are the people who are allegedly the conservatives standing up for conservative values? And one of the big questions that I have as well is this report came out from Congress about the various ways that Joe Biden has committed impeachable offenses. And yet one of your fellow members of Congress has said that Speaker Johnson said that there's likely articles of impeachment that would follow November 5th, that he doesn't want to have that fight before November 5th. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, this is 2 years too late almost. I mean, why would you just wait until after the election because you don't want a controversy? I mean, he's the one who has always said, we will follow where the facts and the evidence lead. We're not going to get political about this. And yet that to me is very political.
It is indeed. And as you know, I've long said that I thought President Biden should be impeached. Number one, for the border invasion. We absolutely should have impeached him long ago for the willful, purposeful, intentional invasion of the border, the violation of our laws and his oath of office to keep us safe. Secondly, he should be impeached for all of the unconstitutional actions that he's taken, that he's done, whether it's just depleting our strategic petroleum reserves or whether it's the student loan transfer schemes and things like that, where he has said he didn't have the authority and the power to do it, and then he's done it anyway. And then on top of that, the Biden crime family activities. So I don't expect that after the election, irrespective of what happens on November 5, I don't believe there'll be the political will to follow through on something that we haven't done in 2 years. Mayorkas should have been impeached. We certainly did try there, but we tried too late. We should have tried much sooner. Certainly Merrick Garland should be impeached. Christopher Wray should probably be impeached for these abuse of powers by these people in the Department of Injustice. So I don't see it happening after November 5, irrespective of how the election turns out. But it's unfortunate that we didn't exercise that responsibility earlier in this 2-year term that the American people trusted us with.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and there are so many people who, I mean, I was even just talking to a small group that I lead at my home church last night, and we're going through, you know, principles of the Constitution and some of those things. And one of the questions that someone asked me after the class, like, well, you know, there's all of these tools and these resources to actually provide accountability in the Constitution. Why don't we see all of this? And so there's just no political will. And if more people, when they actually violated the Constitution, were held accountable, then hopefully they would think twice about doing that. But, you know, my view on it is, even if Speaker Johnson and the House passed impeachment, we would probably see the Senate just decline to even pursue it, which is really unfortunate, in the same way that we saw with Mayorkas. So I agree with you. I mean, it's too little too late. But in just the last minute I have with you, Congressman Bob Gooden, thanks so much, as always, for coming on and giving us the insights of what's going on Capitol Hill. Is there anything else that we should be paying attention to as Congress comes back into session?
Yes, I guess I'll just add one thing. We're trying to hold accountable the Biden administration for the WHO sovereignty issue. The Biden administration is covertly trying to surrender our sovereignty to the UN and the WHO to control how we would have to respond when the WHO declared any kind of a health emergency, the next health emergency, or any kind of a crisis like a climate crisis or a poverty crisis or a gun violence crisis, as they would call those kind of things. And they are secretly, apart from the Senate, trying to enter into effectively a treaty with the WHO. So we're trying to expose that. We're going to have a hearing and or a press conference on that in the next week or two. Some of my colleagues, it's the most important issue that's getting the least amount of attention. Frank Gaffney's doing wonderful work trying to lead that sovereignty coalition, but that's something Great. We've got to get the American people paying attention to.
Great. Well, we'd love to have you back and other members on that issue so we can learn more about it. Thanks so much. And you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.